Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Welcome to Listen Now, the podcast where we go through the most important rockin'est albums of all time. This season, we're focusing on albums from the 1980s. I'm your host, Matt Stewart, and with me, as always, is my co-host and cousin, Sam Tonkin. Welcome, Sam.
Hello, hello.
This week, Sam, we're talking about Van Halen's 1984. And this was voted in as the 17th most popular 80s rock album by our listeners. That's what we're doing this season. We're going through the 80s albums as voted by you, the listeners, so far. Number 20 was Huey Lewis and the News of Sports.
Nice.
Number 19, Joan Jett and the Black Hearts as I Love Rock and Roll.
Great.
Number 18, Midnight Oil's Diesel and Dust. And now we're up to number 17, Van Halen's 1984.
Amazing.
Now, if you want to know what we're doing next week, listen all the way through till after the outro track and we'll let you know then. Well, what was your relationship growing up with Van Halen? Sam, did you grow up with Van Halen? Were they friends of yours?
I did. They were friends of mine from around the block. This was very very much on the outer of Craig, as I said in earlier episode, Craig's musical influences. Yeah, my dad. Very much was a Cold Chisel, Midnight Oil type bloke. Very much the Australiana pub rock. But something about Van Halen really got him, so it really got him. And so I grew up, I think this was my first of the albums that we've done that was a greatest hits familiarity that I had with the band.
Right. Oh, okay. The first three you didn't have that, but this one you did.
Yeah.
Well, for me, it's another greatest hits band.
Yep.
Which greatest hits did you familiar with?
We had the first greatest hits.
The volume one one?
Yeah, volume one. And we also had Best of Both Worlds later on, which I think there was a double disc and the covers were the pattern of Eddie Van Halen's guitar.
Right.
The red with the white and black stripes through it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got that pattern at the Saints home ground sometimes, I think because it's Saints colours.
Oh, of course.
Sponsored
by Van Halen.
And is the Best of Both Worlds, is that one disc is David Lee Roth and the other is Sammy Hagar?
No, it's all mixed. I don't know if it's chronological. I haven't looked at it for a while, actually. But it's all mixed up and everything, which is cool. Kicks off, of course, with Eruption, which really.
Yeah, so
there's nothing else.
The one that I bought actually.
Volume one.
So I knew them, you know, bits and pieces off the radio. Jump was, you know, around
huge,
forever.
Huge, huge, huge.
So when it came, when 1984 came out, I was a baby, I think. So, you know, I didn't.
I kind of came out banging your head.
I kind of missed it first time around, but as it went along, I guess you just picked up bits and pieces from whatever. So by the time I was a teenager, they already seemed like kind of old music, but it was still around. And, I enjoyed it a bit. And then I don't know why, but I think I just saw it. It was at a JB Hi-Fi or something. I saw it discounted, $10 for the greatest hit. So I picked it up.
Amazing.
So, yeah, I just because it starts with Eruption, which is one of his very early songs. I feel like maybe the version that I had did, I think it might have been chronological the way it was.
Yeah, I feel like volume one was.
And yeah, so.
And that was all David Lee Roth, wasn't it?
No, that had, it went.
Oh, it was Hagar in that too.
Yeah, Why Can't This Be Love, Dreams, When It's Love. So Pound Cake, Right Now.
Tell me
Can't
why
Stop Loving
can't
You.
This Be Love. Yeah, the
Humans Being.
Oh my God. I think the general theme with David Lee Roth was like sex, and then Sammy Hagar was like, I'm looking for love.
Yeah,
that's I'm looking for the real thing, difference. Man.
I think people who were around at the time seemed to not enjoy Sammy Hagar, but I don't know, because for me it was all in the past.
It was all in one.
I thought the Sammy Hagar stuff was really fun.
Yeah. Good sing-alongs. Both of them are good sing-alongs.
But yeah, they're very different vibes.
Yeah. But both worked, I thought.
I think so too.
Again, we're not purists. So if you're a big fan of Van Halen with just in general, or if you prefer one singer over another, please let us know.
Yeah, that'd be very interesting.
Socials or our letters to Alan.
And then, but the original lineup basically is all back together now.
Yeah.
Bar one. Barring Michael Anthony, the bass player. Mm-hmm. I think Eddie Van Halen's son's now on bass.
And his name is?
Gregory.
Wolfgang.
Van Halen. Wolfgang is what his friends call him, but his real name's Gregory.
No, I'm going with Wolfgang. Excuse me, Gregory, could you just rip out a bass solo? Thank you.
And I'm pretty sure, Michael Anthony, apparently a great bass player, and he sort of, he was kind of just booted out without, I think he found out third hand or something.
That he was out?
Yeah, pretty lame. Pretty lame.
Yeah. No bueno.
But, so this album, the 1984.
Now, we talked about last week Midnight Oil's sixth album, and I believe this is Van Halen's sixth album as well.
Ah, interesting.
That or Wikipedia is lying to me.
Oh, it could do.
Potench.
But interestingly as well, after this album, when they were looking for a new singer, they got Sammy Hagar.
Mm.
We learned in Jimmy Barnes' autobiography that Eddie Van Halen went around and auditioned him, and Jimmy was sort of like, I'm not keen.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not keen to do ballads.
Yeah, that's...
Which is the direction I guess they were going in.
I wonder how they would have fitted. Sammy Hagar. I'd pay just to see, like...
Would have been sick.
Just, oh my God, imagine Jimmy Barnes singing Jump. I can't even hear it.
Yeah.
Are you all?
Remember, he's got Honey as well as Gravel.
And Nothing Got Me Down. You got it tough. Maybe we'll just call him Jimmy.
Do you have a bit of info, a bit of a bio for Van Halen?
Oh, I got a little piece here for us. So as we know, they are an American band. They formed in Pasadena, California in about 1972, and have been credited with restoring hard rock to the forefront of the music scene. But before all that happened, the Van Halen brothers were born in Amsterdam in 1953 and 55, and were sons to Dutch musician Jan Van Halen and Indonesian-born Indo Eugenia Van Beers. And the family moved to Pasadena in 1962. Young Edward first studied classical piano and became quite proficient, although never really learned how to read sheet music, which is fair. I think that shit's hard. And eventually the brothers started playing music together in the 60s with Eddie on drums and Alex on guitar. While Eddie was delivering newspapers to pay for his new drum set, Alex would sneak over and play them. Eventually Eddie found out about it and out of frustration pretty much told Alex, why don't you go fucking play drums and I'll play your guitar, which turns out actually worked pretty well because that remained their positions for the rest of time.
Amazing.
So they formed their first band, which was called The Broken Combs, another classic album band name to add to our collection. In 1964, they played a whole bunch of backyard parties, gained a little bit of local popularity, changed their name to another cracker, the Trojan Rubber Co., and then formed a band called Genesis with Eddie as lead vocalist, the guitarist, Alex on drums, and Mark Stone on bass. They initially rented a sound system from David Lee Roth, but decided to save money by letting him join as a lead vocalist, even though his previous auditions had been unsuccessful. In 1974, so a couple of years later, they decided to replace Mark Stone on bass with Michael Anthony, who was their longstanding until the mid-90s?
Yeah, bassist? Even longer, I think.
Early 2000s, maybe? More recently, maybe. And was also, so he was bassist and also a lead vocalist from another local band called Snake. The band eventually changed their name to Mammoth when they discovered that Genesis was already being used by a little known band called Genesis, nothing too wild. And eventually, late in 1974, they changed their name to Van Halen, which was David Lee Roth claims as his brainchild, saying he felt the name had power, just like the name Santana. Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think he was right. If that was his suggestion, I think it's a great band name.
It just sounds like the music for, like, you know what, just matches?
Yes. Mark Anthony was there till about 2007.
Oh, shit, that's even more recently than I thought. Poor bastard. So that was the original lineup for a good chunk of their early days. So 74 until 85. This album was released in 84, was it not? As well as the name? Or was it released in 85? I thought it was released.
No, it's released in 84.
Okay. And then, yeah, a year later, after the successes, David Lee Roth fucked off again. Well, for the first time, first of many. It seemed to be a running theme, actually, with the Van Halen brothers. Apparently were very particular about a lot of things and were very bullheaded, so they would not compromise a lot, which is why I think they've had three singers, and I might find the name of the other one.
Gary Sharon.
Thank you.
From Extreme.
Old Boston band, wasn't it?
You know, More Than Words.
No.
They had this pretty big album called Porno Graffiti.
Nice.
Sounds
great.
What did I call him? Let me look him up.
Gary.
Oh, I'll just look him up.
Yeah, okay, you do that. And I will continue on with
Gary Sharon. Is that what I said?
I think so. Gregory.
Gary and Gregory, you know, they're two great names.
Of the 80s.
So, yeah, Porno Graffiti they released in 1990, and it was big. It had songs like Decadent Dance, Little Jack Horny, Get the Funk Out.
Oh, my God.
And then More Than Words was a big hit, and so was Wholehearted. They were their sort of two big hit songs.
I don't know if I've heard either of them.
Okay. Is that what you're asking to hear some?
Subtly, yes.
More Than Words, real 90s ballady, but they were more of like a sort of a hair metal band.
What? Okay.
So, yeah, it's funny. I imagine, so this is More Than Words. I reckon Craig would have loved this. Maybe.
Can you fast forward it? I might know this. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, it was a big hit. And Wholehearted was a bit rockier.
Oh, this sounds familiar as well.
But yeah, apparently it didn't work out when he joined Van Halen. Didn't go down super well.
Oh, this is fun.
Yeah, it's cool, I reckon.
Bow, bow, bow. Oh, yeah, yeah. That key change. Oh, this is a bit Bon Jovi. This is going on my running tracks.
Bit of hoedown-y sort of.
It is.
Hoedown metal. Love it.
Hoedown metal. Oh, that's some 80s vocals there. Yeah. Jeez, the vibrato on some of these blokes back in the day were huge.
Real good. I think the guitarist's name was Nino. What was it?
Something. Nino Gregory.
Nino Gregory, that's it. Nuno. Betancourt.
I would have lost it if it was actually Gregory. That would have been great.
Anyway, we're getting sidetracked here talking about Porno Graffiti.
Well, let me see where we are at. So their first album, I believe, had Running with the Devil and Eruption on it, as well as a cover of The Kinks' You Really Got Me. Is that correct? I've written this down. It seems correct, but that's wild. That's like when we found out that K-San was on... Yeah. Cold Chisel's first album.
Yeah. Huge. So the Eruption was like, at the time, it was just like I don't think rock guitar had been heard like that. And I remember seeing this or hearing this a long time ago that he used to play it with his back to the audience so no one could steal his
His finger technique. Tapping method.
Yeah, double tapping before they were signed.
Wow, that's insane.
And people are like, how the fuck is he doing that?
What are these noises?
Yeah.
After that kind of album, they toured for nearly a year opening for Black Sabbath and established a reputation for their performances, which was owed much to Eddie Van Halen's technical guitar wizardry and David Lee Roth's flamboyant antics and stage persona. Which is actually one of the points that made them rivals later on is because they were both both very much trying to be the front men.
Right, yep.
So it's two alphas trying to go at each other, basically.
That's when rock bands never survive two alphas.
Mm-mm. There's always one.
Needs to be a leader and some beta boys.
Yeah, some beta
or
boys.
Or girls. Girls can be betas too.
Good save. Or any of our non-binary folk. Everyone. But basically... two alphas equals no bueno, no good. So by the early 80s, Van Halen was one of the most successful rock acts of all time. And their sixth album, 1984, was a hit, and its lead single, Jump, is the band's only US number one single to date. But was
I reckon we can call it. I reckon they're not having a number one.
Ever again? I'd say it's probably likely.
It's a bold call, but I think.
So it was released in, January 1984. There you go. And then.
Have you read this thing that you've written?
Apparently not. Oh, God, I don't know what I've written here. I've written a bunch of spud. It was well received by music critics, with Rolling Stone ranking the album number 81 on the list of its 100 greatest albums of the 80s.
I'm gonna read that article out shortly.
Excellent.
Jeez, you've stolen my thunder 2 weeks in a row now.
It's a great – how many more albums are on that list that we're doing later in the season?
I think only maybe one or two.
Oh, really?
There's not many more. Yeah.
Well, we've picked some crackers.
Well, I think our listenership has a different point of view to the old Rolling Stone. They're a bit more with it, let's say.
Van Halen, so they released four singles off of it, which was Jump, Panama, I'll Wait, and the MTV favorite, Hot for Teacher, which is fair enough, it's a cracking song. And I just remembered, you know, do you remember that Adam Sandler movie, Little Nicky?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's a
scene where he's just like banging his head to Running with the Devil.
Right.
And I think that was my first time I'd seen anything Van Halen related in like pop culture that wasn't just on Triple M.
Oh, I remember there was a Van Halen related argument in another Adam Sandler film, The Wedding Singer. So he was obviously a fan.
Oh, yeah. Was it when they were arguing about who was the better singer?
Oh, no. I think they were arguing about whose fault the breakup was. It was Eddie Van Halen versus David Lee Roth.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, please tell us.
He's like, he knew he was a cop because he backed up David Lee Roth or something. or something like that. Weird. That's a real vague memory.
I'll find it and see if I can find it and post it. But yeah, tell us about what Billboard said about number 81.
Well, I'll tell you what Rolling Stone said.
Billboard, what did I say?
And they put it in at number 81 on their top 100 albums of the 80s. Writing, "It's obvious to me," says producer Ted Templeman, when asked why 1984 won Van Halen a broader and larger audience. Eddie Van Halen discovered the synthesizer. That's what he puts it all down to. The foursome had been selling out arenas for more than a decade on the basis of Eddie's virtuosic, fleet-fingered guitar playing, singer David Lee Roth's blunt, raunchy lyrics, and the brute force of Michael Anthony's bass and Alex Van Halen's drums. But 1984... abetted by tunes that swirled elements of synth pop into metal, most evidently on the hit single Jump, and by a string of campy low-budget videos that found favour on MTV, carried Van Halen to a new plateau of popularity. No longer viewed as threatening to those with a chronic fear of metal, the band somehow became amusing and even endearing to middle America. And all the while, Van Halen continued to rock like crazy.
What?
According to Templeman, who produced all six Van Halen albums prior to and including 1984, having time to experiment in the studio made the difference. The group was finding out how to do stuff for themselves rather than, here, do this, because we got to get back on the road, he says. So they had a little time to get creative. They got into all kinds of different things because they were bored doing the same old stuff. At the time, Eddie was in the process of building his own studio with Don Landy, the band's longtime engineer and now its producer. While boards and tape machines were being installed, the guitarist began fiddling around on synthesizers to pass time. There were no presets, says Templeman. He would just twist off until it sounded right. One night, Eddie and Alex laid down an instrumental demo of what would become Jump, excitedly ringing up the slumbering producer when they'd finished. "I still have it on my answering machine," recalls Templeman with a chuckle. "Ted, come on up. It's like 3 a.m, but we really came up with something great." They played a little bit over the phone. Roth added the lyrics, which he wrote while being chauffeured in his red Mercury convertible, and Jump went on to top the charts, heralding the arrival of hard rock and heavy metal in the theretofore impervious top 40. "They connected with a pop audience," says Templeman. "Whatever Bon Jovi has today, Van Halen picked up with Jump then."
Wow.
Jump was followed by two more singles from 1984, I'll Wait, a ballad whose chorus was written by Roth with an uncredited Michael McDonald, and Panama, a hard charging number to which the sounds of Eddie Van Halen's revving Lamborghini were added. That's a genuine Lamborghini sound. The album turned out to be the last recorded by Van Halen in its original configuration as Roth, and was soon replaced by Sammy Hagar. Producer Templeman swears he didn't see it coming. There were no indicators to signal breakup at all. Matter of fact, they were really united on that sucker. Balls to the wall. They were going after the world, man. That's a fun little snapshot of what it was all about. That's interesting that I assumed that the difference of opinion about this album, because I've read that Roth didn't want the synthesizer work and Van Halen did, and that caused arguments. They were going in different directions, and maybe that's why he left. But, yeah, maybe not, according to Templeman anyway.
Yeah.
What would he know?
Yeah.
He's only the bloody producer. That's also interesting that Oh Wait was a single, because I knew very well Jump and Panama as well as Hot for Teacher, but Oh Wait I'd never heard of before.
No.
And that's the other very synthy one.
Yeah.
So that's probably why they picked it. Jump is super synthy.
I wonder if they kicked off with Jump and then
Jump
just
was the
tried
first
to pick
single.
Yeah. Interesting. I got a little bit more about the shifting members and a couple of other fun facts. I'll just read you a quick one.
Okay.
So we've already talked kind of about the shifting band members. But one fact that I saw that was really cool was, as of 2007, Van Halen was one of only five rock bands with two studio albums that sold more than 10 million copies in the US. I think since then a couple more have been added, but of the rock bands, you've got that have sold 10 million copies or more. So that's Diamond, I believe.
Yeah.
So the Beatles have gone six times Diamond, Led Zeppelin five, or have had albums that went. Eagles have had three. Bruce Springsteen, would you call him a band or would you call it? Because it's like
Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band.
But if he's just credited. Anyway, Def Leppard, which was, I did not see that one coming. Pink Floyd and Van Halen.
Yeah, right. Huey Lewis didn't quite get there. I thought sports.
Not quite.
Or maybe they don't.
Well, this was all of who have done it twice or more.
Oh, right.
As in they've had two albums go that high.
I feel like sports went pretty close to 10 million, but maybe not.
The number one top-selling artist in America is Garth Brooks, who has had seven albums go at least Diamond once.
No kidding.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
Country music for you.
Yeah, big following of country music over there.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
But yeah, let's get into the tracks. What do we kick off with?
Awesome. Well, it kicks off with a self-titled little intro number.
Little ditty.
It's called 1985. The titular track.
1984?
1984. They really threw a curveball there. So this is just him sort of mucking around a bit on the synth by the sounds of it. Kind of sounds like a... It's a mood setter.
Yeah, but the mood is not taken anywhere. It's about to go.
It's a builder. It's a tension builder.
It is. So definitely not a cracking album opener, though, I must say.
Yeah, well, I guess I don't really count it as a track. It's not really the opener.
What
to me, it's sort of like a pre-opener.
Yeah, but then like Eruption is also just music, but I'd count that as an opener.
Right.
Where do we draw the line? What makes
tricky.
An opener? Write us at listennowpod@gmail.com. What makes an album opener?
it just goes for a minute, and then it goes into Jump. The true album opener, I'd say.
There's a note here. The minute plus track's otherworldly synthesizer was culled from 45 minutes worth of noodling by Eddie Van Halen.
Shatter they got it down over that. I'd love to have opened the album with 45.
45 minutes of that, Christ.
Do, 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 do. This film clip's one of the happiest film clips of all time.
Well, which is funny because David Lee Roth wrote in his memoir that he wrote the lyrics to Jump after watching a man waffle as to whether to commit suicide by jumping off a skyscraper or not.
Oh, right. And he's just like, just do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's fucked, hey?
Pretty fun.
But it is.
Film
it's
clip,
so
though.
Like happy and.
And you see, there's this bit where Van Halen's doing a little.
And he's smiling at the camera just, and he's just like, hey.
Barrels of smiling.
That's so cute.
So happy.
Baby, just how you feel.
So I think most people listening would know this song pretty well.
Yeah, I'd say this is like Beds Are Burning and K-San and I Love Rock and Roll and, you know, some of the big tracks. This is probably the one that's overplayed so much that you don't really want to listen to it by choice anymore.
It signals their change in direction or adding the synth sound. It's got some great lines like, hey you, who said that? Tell me how you been. But then the next track, Panama, is sort of, I feel like it partners it well, but it just takes the synths back out and it's just riffage again.
This is one of the number one driving songs, surely. I think it was used in like Superbad. Oh, I think it was used in Superbad when Fogel's in the backseat of the cop car and they're just like driving, they're doing like drifting around a car park.
Right.
Or something. I swear to God, that's when it is. I'll find it. Add that to my list. So the lyrics for this one came in because Roth was questioned about the themes of his lyrics being solely about nonstop partying, sex, and cars, and it dawned on him that he hadn't actually written about a car, so he set out to do so.
Right.
And the song's breakdown featured a cameo by Eddie's 1972 Lamborghini Miura S, don't know if I said that right, which he brought down to the studio to lay down the rumble of the engine.
Let me see if I can find it.
Burning down the avenue.
Let's go to the chorus first.
Zero discipline. Don't you know she's got loving me. You loser, you match her. Oh, yeah. Oh. Oh, just that real, like.
It's a great riff. All right, let me see if I can find this breakdown.
Here we go.
There's that rev.
From the heat coming off. In between my legs.
Shows how much cash there was in music. This is before their big hit breakthrough album. He was already driving a Lamborghini. So then we get into a couple of tracks that I wasn't familiar with before. Firstly, Top Jimmy. Do you think, in my mind, this is about Jimmy Barnes?
I always love to think that.
They saw Jimmy and they're just like, who is this guy?
Top Jimmy. Also, this music, I feel like, is really beautiful and it's taken me elsewhere. And then the direction of the song is totally different.
And then it's sort of that slidey guitar. It's sort of that hoedown-y sort of.
Yeah. It's got a.
I love that.
It's got like some Dead or Alive Bon Jovi sounds to it.
Isn't that what they were saying? Any of that Bon Jovi shit you're thinking of,
they got from this. Yeah. So Jimmy was a real person called James Konek, who worked at the Top Taco stand outside A&M Records in Hollywood and fronted Top Jimmy and the Rhythm Pigs at night. That's an album. That's a band name. Top Jimmy and the Rhythm Pigs.
Right.
Roth had struck up a friendship with Konek and joined him on stage to jam. The singer's tale of the man who drove all the women crazy and took over what was initially... David Lee Roth's tale of the man who drove all the women crazy took over what was initially an instrumental piece called Ripley.
Right. Bon Jovi's first album came out the same month as this album.
Wow. Also, can you skip to the last, like, 5 seconds of this song? Because I reckon it's... Does that not sound like it's going to jump directly into Hot for Teacher?
Yeah, well, it's the double kick.
Yeah, but it doesn't.
I wonder if they were thinking that because they've squeezed in Drop Dead Legs in between.
Yeah.
Some of these album tracks, are, yeah, I just weren't familiar with at all. They're real good, solid.
Yeah, this one I didn't know at all.
Rock tunes.
This one, they drew inspiration from AC/DC's Back in Black with Van Halen, or Eddie, delivering an airy and sharp riff that carries through the song until it ends with a boisterous and bluesy guitar solo over an unanticipated and lengthy coda.
Back in Black, real sack.
Almost, yeah.
So then we go into track six, which is maybe my favorite Van Halen song, Hot for Teacher. Just love the drums.
Oh, so good. And this was...
And the bluesy riff is great.
Alex Assemblage of four bass drums. Used to create the Sonic Blitz.
Yeah, it's real nice. Massage for the ears.
So good. It's an amalgamation of Eddie's non-stop fretwork shuffle and Roth at his most comedic. And a relentless thump at the bottom end.
I think, I don't know if this is going too far, but was David Lee Roth the horniest man in the world in the 80s?
I mean, I feel like yes. Although I've read Motley Crue's The Dirt book, and that's what I imagine all of these bands were doing at that time.
Right.
Oh, this bit's so good.
That just bluesy.
What do you think the teacher's going to look like this year? Oh.
Sorry to disagree. I think the better part of that was the guitar, but...
Teacher, stop that screaming. Teacher, don't you see? Don't want to be no uptown fool. But I'm doing well. Teacher needs to see me after school. Those drums are just fucking off chops. Oh, got it bad. I'm hot for teacher.
So then the next track was also a single. They've split the singles up, tracks 2 and 3 and 6 and 7. But this is the one, this is the sort of forgotten single. And the 80-est sounding track.
Definitely.
Oh, no, maybe it's there with Jump.
Jump's pretty good. But this is like some real, like, we're trying to be serious synth. How do you be serious with a synth? Like this, apparently.
Gloomy synth.
It is a bit.
Yeah, this was the track that I found the hardest to get into on this album.
Which is interesting because it wasn't fully written by Van Halen.
No. And I see they forgot to credit the other songwriter on the US release, only on the UK release maybe.
Yeah, Michael McDonald from former Doobie Brother.
Hey, one of the Doobs.
One of the old Doobs.
Hey, remember the Doobie Brothers? Well, we got one of them.
But pretty much, it was a point of contention between their producer, I believe, and Eddie, because the producer kept getting under the guitarist, or kept getting under Eddie's skin in the studio by humming Hold Your Head Up by Argent while they were referring to this song, so they kind of pissed each other off in a way. And then David Lee Roth hit a wall in composing the lyrics to it as well, so that's why they brought in X-Dube.
That's not Rod Argent. He's not Argent from something. Argent from bloody The Zombies. It is. Oh, that's interesting. So he was the keyboardist from The Zombies. Who did a... I did a Do Go On episode about.
Oh, really?
They connected. There was a fake band who toured as The Zombies after The Zombies broke up.
What?
And two of the members went on to form ZZ Top.
What?
It's a wild story.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a YouTube episode. If people are interested, I'll try and remember to put a link to that. But yeah, it's also on the podcast feed. But yeah, it's interesting that he was humming Argent. I hadn't heard of Argent before I was researching for that episode. Yeah, and the Zombies are like they're a Hall of Fame rock band, psychedelic rock band as well.
What?
Yeah, that old Wade, I don't know. That one
was a hard one to get into.
And then it finishes with a couple of classic-y sort of Van Halen rockers, Girl yeah. Gone Bad. Yeah, these are like there's a few tracks on this album they just sort of sweep past me. This is one of them, but I think there's some great guitar stuff in both of these last tracks.
So this one, Eddie wrote the track sitting in his hotel room closet because his then wife was sleeping. So he's humming and whistling into a micro cassette recorder in the cupboard. And then came in the next day to finish it properly. And it's been described as featuring some of Van Halen's most searing guitar work, including a frenetic solo that teeters dangerously on the edge without ever going overboard. Not sure what that means, but hectic guitar, I think, is the simplified version.
Yeah, it's hectic the whole way through, really. Picture him with his guitar in the cupboard as well.
Yes.
I'm picturing, like, my cupboard, but no, he probably had, like, his cupboard's as big as my bedroom, probably.
That's, yeah, I
his
like...
His Lamborghini's in there as well. Yes. Oh, that's where I kept my wardrobe.
It's just
Lamborghini.
The cupboard. Yeah, I was picturing a cupboard, like, the size of a door. Squared. Cubed.
I'm going to pick up some of that guitar solo. It's teeters on the edge.
Teeters. God, he can hit some high notes, though. Far out.
And some high jumps.
And some high bloody...
That high split jump.
Hectic. How many singers of a hair metal band were doing that in the 80s? Because yeah. I reckon none of them could kick like David Lee Roth.
My favourite bit of that clip, I think, is right at the end where they sort of... the three of them minus Alex shuffle towards the camera.
Yeah.
Front shuffle.
Yes. So is there funny. A weird freeze frame at the end of that?
Yeah, probably. Has he jumps, maybe?
Yeah, I feel like yes.
And then the final track, House of Pain.
Which was one of the oldest songs was one of the oldest songs in Van Halen's inventory at the time, dating back to 1975, and Eddie used to perform Eruption in the middle of it during some of their live shows. And the track was actually part of the 1976 demo produced by Gene Simmons.
Right.
Of Kiss, if anyone didn't know. That Gene Simmons. Yeah, this one, the last two tracks on this album were a bit... I know, it just didn't stick with me. And I probably listened to this album a fair amount since last week.
Yeah, I've smashed it my usual 20-plus times.
Yeah. Yeah.
I research hard.
You do.
Especially when the researcher is playing an album on loop. I work hard for this podcast.
Work hard, listen hard, play hard.
Yeah, I really like those last two tracks, but yeah, like you said, they're not earworms or anything.
No,
but they're rockers.
They are heavy. They're headbangers.
Chugga 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 chugga. Sick. All right, well that's the album. That's 1984. I love the boldness of an album just titling it as the whole year. This is what 1984 sounds like.
This is 1984.
We are 1984.
This is it. This is it. So there's an ongoing, I suppose, joke or a fact that goes around about Van Halen and brown M&Ms. Have you ever heard of this?
No. Oh, is it what that they asked for them to be taken out?
Yeah, and it's I've heard it numerous times, and it's always like kind of the butt of a joke. But I found a little article that describes the more in-depth details of it. So Van Halen had a notable effect on the modern rock music tour with their use of a concert technical contract rider. The band famously used its contract riders to specify a wish list, a practice now used throughout the music industry. They pioneered extensive requirements, including power availability and stage construction details. But the band's demands were not limited to technical issues. Their now infamous rider specified that a bowl of M&Ms with all of the brown M&Ms removed was to be placed in the dressing room. And people thought they were just being like absolute fucking divas. Like, fucking look at these blokes. Don't even want to eat the brown M&Ms. They all taste the same anyway. But according to David Lee Roth, this was listed in the technical portion of the contract. Not because the band wanted to make ridiculous demands of the venue, but rather as a test of whether or not the contract had actually been thoroughly read and honoured, as it contained other requirements involving legitimate safety concerns. If the bowl was present, then the band members could safely assume the other legitimate items in the technical rider were being fulfilled to their satisfaction. Conversely, if the bowl was missing or brown M&Ms were present, then the band members would be within their rights to have the venue inspect the work and ask that it be redone, etc. And that was because their concern for safety was real, as during their earlier tours, not only had equipment been damaged, but several members of their road crew were nearly electrocuted, both to an inadequate safety measures and preparation on part of the local venue. So it was all basically just a test to see if all the technical aspects had been fulfilled by chucking in this little request about brown M&Ms.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah. So it sounds like they were taking OH&S really seriously.
Yeah, I've heard it'd be interesting to know how some, you know, you can rewrite history sometimes.
Yeah.
But taking him at his word, yeah, that is interesting. I have heard that people do that as well. They do it to make sure people are taking the rider seriously.
But then there's ones like Mariah Carey. Have you heard of her old riders? It would be like, I need a whatever square by whatever square foot room completely decorated white. There must be like 12 white rabbits. It must be set at like 22 degrees.
Same
with
reason.
X amount of humidity.
Same reason. So OH&S.
Yep. She can't perform otherwise.
Yeah.
And someone must wheel her or carry her to the stage because she does not need to do that because she is Mariah Carey.
Yeah, okay. That's fair enough.
And if everyone could check the backing track was on, that would be great.
And her mic is off.
Yes.
Nah, good on her. Legend.
Legend.
Legend Mariah Carey.
Yeah.
I can't think of a song, but, you know, with all those hits.
All I want for Christmas is you. Except that wasn't hers, was it?
Yeah, isn't it?
I don't think it's not originally hers. Oh, isn't it just a Christmas carol?
I reckon that's one of hers.
Oh, fuck. I've been living a lie.
Why have we gone down this path?
I don't know. What is another Mariah Carey song? I can't.
There's a good chance I'm editing this part out.
That's great. Because I can't think of a single Mariah Carey song.
Let me find. So.
So Emotional, was that one?
I do not know.
Me neither.
Mariah Carey co-wrote and produced it.
There you go.
Okay, Sam.
Fuck.
So back off.
Can you tell me another song by her?
Yeah. I remember she had this big album called Music Box. But I just can't remember any songs off it. But I would know them if I heard them, I'm sure. You know? Wow. Let me see. Okay. Let's see. Vision of Love. Number one US hit.
Never heard
Love
of it.
Takes Time, number one hit. Someday, number one hit. I Don't Want to Cry, number one hit. Emotions, number one hit. I'll Be There, number one hit. Dream Lover, number one hit. Hero, number one hit. She had a lot of number
ones. Is that
ones.
The one that's like...
All I Want for Christmas, number one. Fantasy, number one. One Sweet Day with Boys to Men, number one. I know that one. Always Be My Baby, number one. Honey, number one. My All, number one. What the hell? Heartbreaker number one featuring Jay-Z.
Why the fuck can't I remember a single one how it goes except for All I Want for
Thank
Christmas?
God I Found You number one. What the hell?
Oh my
we
God.
Belong Together number
oh,
one.
Oh, I know that one.
Don't Forget About Us number one. Touch
we
My Body
belong
number one.
Together. Oh, I know that one too from that viral YouTube video. touch
how
my
many
body.
Number one she must have that's a lot of number one hits.
She's a very popular person. That's
why
she
Halen's had one number one hit.
Why do you think she can ask for a room completely decorated white with like 89 doves or some shit?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
well, you know, fair enough.
That's a lot of number ones, though.
That's a lot of number ones. She, I think she'll find she's a pretty big star.
I would, yeah, I'd back that.
Anyway, that we'll save that for our series about, I don't know, what, the pop stars.
Anyway, so what do you rate this album out of ratey 80?
Give it a ratey.
Yeah, give it a rating.
Rating. I reckon I really liked it.
Shock.
I think, I don't know. I feel it's just so silly to compare these albums.
Well,
I'm going
to
say.
We're not comparing them to each other. Let's just, out of 80, what would you, if it's like 10 points for hits, 10 points for musical ability.
If you give me a system like that, music.
Well, you made this system. This was your idea.
Well, I'm going to say 60. they're a band. If any band needs this number, it's them. 69.
Yeah. I'm going to match that with a 69 also. Because
they're a real 69.
Actually, I can't do that. It's not. I'm going to give it a 60. Sorry.
That's a big drop.
It is. I was like, 69. That's good. That's good for them. But then those last two songs that just really didn't stick with me. I can't rate them that high.
Well, last three, and then you didn't really like the third last track either.
No.
And the first track.
No.
You didn't like track 1, 7, 8, 9.
And how many tracks are on there?
9. So you
maybe I should drop it further. 55.
Great.
55 it is.
Well, yeah, so you like Jump, Panama, Top Jimmy, Drop Dead Legs and Hot for Teacher, is that right?
I think that's about right.
I think my standout tracks, I think Hot for Teachers is that drums.
Always.
That riff is so good. And then, I don't know. There's a bunch of the other ones that I quite like. I'll wait.
Don't rate that.
The intro song is sort of not really a song.
No. doesn't
if
count.
If it was 45 minutes, then sure. I want to draw it. Yeah, 69 CI for me as well.
Yep.
I'll change all these. Well, at the very end of the season, we'll
revisit.
Yeah, but I'd say 60. All right. So, I still like it. I've liked all four albums. I've really enjoyed.
Yeah,
it's so different from each other.
Very different indeedy.
Any letters in the mailbag this week?
Just one very short little guy, which we appreciate. Short and sharp, not unlike this episode, I believe. Keep singing, Sam. You are cool. Matt is okay. 5 stars, Sean from Canada.
Thank you, Sean from Canada. that feels great to be thought of as okay.
That's thanks for all of your support, Sean. I want to give a shout out to a few people though.
Oh yeah?
Paul Meller, on Twitter always responds to our work, which I appreciate the shit out of. Absolute legend.
Paul, what a guy.
Literally everything. He's all over it, and I appreciate the hell out of it because it's nice to know that someone's listening. Who else we got? Pretty much everyone. There's a lot of random people that have replied to us on Twitter. We've got a handful of new followers this season, which has been fun. So,
if people want to get on the social medias, it's Listen Now Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Yes. And if you want to email us and get on the currently empty letters to Alan, email us at listennowpod@gmail.com. I nearly forgot what we were called.
Me too. I do that all the time. Yeah, get your letters in there. The bag hasn't been filled up because it wasn't all that long between recording last week's and this week's, but there will be a gap before the next one. We record the next one. So plenty of time to get some letters in if you're keen. listennowpod@gmail.com. Well, that does bring us to the end of the bloody episode.
It does.
So nothing else to say except for goodbye, Astrid.
Goodbye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Hey, Hulk, it's me, Captain Australia. Captain America.
Hulk smash.
Next week, if you choose to accept your mission, we're going to be talking about Nine Inch Nails' debut album. And I forget what it's called, but that's all you need to know
Something
so far.
Pieces? Is that it? Why are we so good at this?
Pretty Hate Machine.
Nice.
Pretty Hate Machine.
And Hulk smash record.
I think we'll be doing it with special guests and Ooh. The biggest Nine Inch Nails fan that I know, Evan Munro Smith.
Hulk not smash guest.
From Gamey Gamey Game in the Stupid Old Studios.
So, yay.
Yes, we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Laters.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.